Is sadness the same as depression? We use the two words interchangeably, but Jerome Wakefield says we need to be much more careful. And not just us, the psychological and psychiatric communities as well. Wakefield is the co-author of The Loss of Sadness, and he says psychiatry has transformed sadness into clinical depression. Steve Paulson asked Wakefield how this happened.
The problem here is that in our current situation in our healthcare system, most prescriptions for depression are given by general physicians, general practitioners. General practitioners have very little time to spend with patients. So if you report a few symptoms of sadness to your general practitioner, very often you will get a prescription immediately for antidepressants without any exploration of the context of your symptoms. And then you may well be taking medication needlessly. Large numbers of people experience these feelings without needing a prescription for medication, and they will get over them soon. In addition, medication has some negative side effects, so if you can avoid it, that's a good idea. And in the area of depression, remarkably, we have, unlike many other mental disorders, we have a lot of other ways of helping people who are feeling sad, whether it's normal or pathologically deep, such as various forms of psychotherapy that really do work and should be considered.
But suppose you really have had one of these tough knocks and you're going through a difficult time and you don't like it. I mean, it's painful. What's wrong with taking Prozac to help you out, even if you might naturally come out of this 6 months later?
Well, this is a very important point. I'm not a moralist about taking medication, whether you're disordered, normal. The issue is between you and your physician and has to do with the risks and benefits. If you get classified as having a mental disorder of depression or clinical depression spuriously because the criteria are too loose, then you're going to think, something's wrong with me. I've got to take a medication. And then you might take the medication when otherwise you would have chosen not to. So I think what's happening is that the patient, the consumer, is actually being misled. And there's a further problem, which is that because policymakers think there's so many people out there who have this disorder that aren't being treated, there's aggressive screening of people in general practitioners' offices, even in high schools and other venues, where people are given symptom checklists. You know, have you felt sad in the past 2 weeks? Have you been distracted? Have you had fatigue, difficulty sleeping, lower appetite, and so on? And if you've passed this test with checking off a few of the symptoms, then you automatically qualify as having a depressive disorder without any consideration of your life, what's going on in your life, whether it might be normal. So the problem is it's not necessarily that it's wrong to take medication, although that has its risks, even if you're normal. What's wrong, I think, is being mislabeled as having a disorder on the basis of these loose criteria, and then assuming on that basis that you should take a medication rather than exploring the other options.
Now, when people get classified as being depressed, is there a particular time period that is looked at? I mean, if you've been down and suffering from these various symptoms for so long, then you are officially diagnosed as clinically depressed?
Yes, there is. According to the current official American Psychiatric Association criteria, if you have 5 out of 9 symptoms of the kind I've been describing for 2 weeks, then you are officially suffering from a major depression or what you're calling clinical depression, a mental disorder that's a depressive disorder.
2 weeks? Now, two weeks is not very long.
Exactly. And I think many of us, after a particularly difficult breakup in a romantic relationship, which incidentally is one of the most common circumstances that people report in which they have these symptoms but then kind of spontaneously get better after a while. We can all remember times when maybe we weren't ourselves for a couple of weeks after such a disappointment and we felt sad and we were withdrawn from maybe our usual activities. So I agree with you. I think 2 weeks is awfully short. Now, if you come in and you're suicidal or you have flagrant, you know, deep kinds of symptoms that indicate something's gone wrong with your mental functioning, that's a different story. Then within 2 weeks, you can make that judgment. But otherwise, it seems to me, if there's been an environmental event that would explain somebody having this kind of reaction, then you have the option of saying, you know, perhaps I'm going through a normal period of adjustment, of feeling the wound and recovering from it and thinking it through and reconstructing my life maybe, and maybe I don't want to act prematurely in taking medication to avoid those feelings.
So why did this happen? I mean, this experience that we've all had, I mean, we've all suffered from sadness, if suffering is the right word, and people have for centuries talked about melancholy. Why did this become classified as a medical disease, a mental disorder that had to be treated?
Well, interestingly, it's kind of an accident that this happened, or a side effect of something that was well-intentioned. Back a few decades ago, again in the mid-20th century, around the 1950s, psychiatry was under assault by a lot of critics saying that psychiatric diagnostic criteria weren't precise, psychiatrists wouldn't agree on what the diagnosis was in a given case, and people were saying that psychiatry was just controlling undesirable behavior. It wasn't really a medical discipline that addressed true disorders. So at that point, there was a major push to make psychiatry more precise and more scientific. Now, in 1980, the American Psychiatric Association finally published DSM-3, which is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, Edition 3. To make it more precise for research and clinical practice, they actually defined each disorder precisely. And they wanted to define it in a way that was scientifically useful. So what did they do? They selected symptoms to define each disorder. Now, in the case of depression, they looked at severe cases of depression and they said, what symptoms characterize these conditions? And, you know, sensibly enough, they came up with the kind of list that I've been describing. Deep sadness, lack of pleasure in your usual activities, distraction from your usual ability to focus, fatigue, overeating or undereating, and so on. So they listed these symptoms and said if you had 5 out of 9 of them, you've got a case of clinical depression. Now, the problem here is that this was very well intentioned because it did lead, and in fact, it was successful in some ways, in helping different psychiatrists who had different views of depression to all do research on the same conditions that they could classify precisely with these criteria. And it gave everybody a benchmark. The problem is that in doing this and trying to make it precise, they left out the very thing that enables you to distinguish normal sadness from disorder, namely the human context of the feelings. It's hard to make precise, you know, the question, is something happening in your life that adequately explains why you as a normal person might experience what you're experiencing?
So what you're saying then is that this DSM definition, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual definition that came out in 1980 is outdated, basically. It needs to be revised, and probably there will be significant ramifications. I mean, psychiatrists and doctors who prescribe drugs will look at a new definition and perhaps prescribe in a different way. Are there plans to update the definition?
The manual is being revised. The process is just starting now. It should come out, a new edition should come out in about 5 years or so. Will the definition be changed is a very interesting question. There are many views of this, and you can see that there would be many reasons that organized psychiatry, pharmaceutical companies, and so on might want to keep the same definition. Some of them legitimate, some of them not so legitimate. One legitimate reason is that all the research so far is based on this definition. If you create a new definition, there's a kind of problem with comparing research. But on the other hand, if the old research is flawed and confusing normality with disorder, then that's a problem. In any event, it's not clear what's going to happen because many people will feel that if you try to make the definition correct in the way that we're discussing, then you're going to introduce these vaguer elements, and that will again put psychiatry on a less scientific footing.
Do you think this is a problem for society at large, that we have defined sadness in the way that we have? I mean, that we have turned it into this mental disorder?
If we don't at least try to maintain some boundary between what is disordered and what is normal emotion in life, and we allow psychiatry to start engulfing all of these conditions, what does that mean for the way that we conceive of our lives, of normal emotions, of the depth of emotion? It seems to me this is a broader social question that we all have to grapple with. What range of normal emotion are we willing to accept as part of human nature and as part of a normal, rich human life without trying to aggressively get rid of it by relabeling it as a medical disorder?
Jerome Wakefield is the co-author of The Loss of Sadness, How Psychiatry Transformed Normal Sorrow into Depressive Disorder. Steve Paulson spoke with him.